I'm Serena Williams, and I'm healthier on Row. I've lost 34 pounds in a year with GLP-1s, diet, and exercise. On Row, you can access GLP-1 options, including the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. Go to row.co/journey to see if you qualify. 14 to 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 2.2% to 3.1% in placebo arm. Rx only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/safety.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Queer Quadrant, a podcast where we, two bisexual filmmakers, examine cinema in all its cultural contexts and explore why your favorite four-quadrant blockbuster is maybe not as straight as you think it is.
Now, I would never wish ill upon another human being, obviously, in my life. So please take that
yes,
with a grain of salt.
Yes, you would.
I would, and I'm about to. I'm going to say this now. I actually think that he was in the right for shooting Derek Jeter, never mind the fact he also should have shot A-Rod. I think he did not shoot enough Yankees players. I think that he was right, and that's probably the best thing that Mark Wahlberg as a person has ever done.
I think that we should issue a disclaimer at the top of the pod and say that, like, you're speaking to a self-proclaimed asshole, and that, like,
yes,
this is a subjective
opinion. I don't know if
it's
self-proclaimed. I think when you're born there, it's just thrust upon you, you know?
I have
no choice.
It's like grandfathered in.
Yeah, exactly. Responsibility. The heavy is the head that wears the crown.
Heavy is the Red Sox hat.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think this was like a Ben Affleck and Gone Girl situation where he was like, I'll do it, but you have to let me shoot a Yankees player. If you're going to make me part of the NYPD, I need to.
Like, low-key, I do think that is, like, based on, like, how they talked about, like, wanting to make this movie, where it, like, stemmed from a dinner with Mark and Will and, like, them, I'm like, it does feel like they were probably riffing and they were like, you know, it would be
just
wicked
throwing
funny
shit around. Yeah,
you know. I'm just shocked probably that Jeter was game for something like this, you know.
I mean, he's in the right. He's got Bobby Cannavale defending him.
That's true. Again,
life is,
a person
life
who
is
I
good
forgot was in this movie, like,
he's
he shows up and
he's
I'm like, right.
Scene. One scene yes in this film.
But
Totoro
is he good
as well? Yeah. Good little lineup
yes,
at the
Totoro
beginning.
Totoro is in that. So random. If it's not clear who we are, we are about to tell you.
Oh, wow.
Hello. I am Brooke Solomon.
Jordan Gustafson.
We
shooter
love
of Derek Jeter.
Mm-hmm, yeah, yeah. And you wear that. You wear that proudly. You mm-hmm would not be embarrassed.
Oh,
you,
no.
You
I would be like,
go to that
give
group
me the
with
hate
pride.
Yeah.
Yeah. We love talking about cinema. We love talking about being queer. We love talking about queer cinema. I can't believe I just called this movie queer cinema. But today we are discussing 2010's The Other Guys, the second Adam McKay, Will Ferrell movie that we have covered by sheer coincidence, relatively close together.
It's the year of McKay Ferrell for us.
And we are rejoined, I should say, by Mitchell Bupre, head of editorial at Letterboxd. So nice to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. Very excited to be on for, I think, probably the gayest movie you guys have ever covered, I think. I assume most people listening mm-hmm are thinking, of course, yeah, how did it take them so long to get to The Other Guys?
Yes, it's like we did do Brokeback Mountain. Not close to this. We have such a long list. And obviously, I feel like we have talked about this one before, but what led you to The Other Guys? What was it like, just the cultural fact
I know
that
we did,
our,
we did
we're
not foist
nearing
this movie
a recession
upon you. You brought it.
I saw, yeah, I saw. So you guys sent the long list of kind of like potential ones, and initially I said another one, and I think almost like Jordan, like maybe like 2 hours later, I was like, wait, yeah, no, never
stop
mind. I want to do The Other Guys. And I think honestly, my biggest reason is I kind of was just excited to talk about Michael Keaton and The Other Guys.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Good.
This is, he is my favorite performance in this
easily
film. Yeah. He's so good. I like, think that he's so good because he's not doing too much.
Right.
But every time he appears, you're like, God, he's just cooking.
It's yeah, it's a lovely performance because yeah, like they're also they're not overdoing him in it too much. The like him doing the TLC quotes, like you could have a movie where he's doing that like 15 times and it gets annoying. They right. do it just the right amount to where it's funny every single time. It pays off like in the climax. Like it really just never stops being good. Like he really is like the secret weapon for this movie.
Yes,
he has the best line, or like the best 1-2, I think, in the movie, which is the Gene, how's the family? Good, Lewis. Thanks for asking. My son's bisexual. Tremendous.
So my son's like, bisexual, and he's trying to become
right
a DJ.
A DJ.
I guess he mentions that earlier. The my son's bisexual is the
it's
that,
just
I mean,
so good.
That
the tremendous.
In and of itself is ostensibly the reason that we're covering this. I think that I don't know how many brownie points I'm going to give this movie over the course of the episode, but I give it one brownie point for not going any further with the bisexual son bit, which is a great bit, and being like, my son's bisexual, I don't know what to do about it.
I gotta work
crazy.
Two jobs.
Exactly. Like, it is just like a detail of his life, and it is a very, very funny anecdote.
Yes. It reads like that. Obviously, this came out after, but every time we talk about bisexuality on like a movie or if people reference it, it makes me think of the cover from the magazine where it's like, bisexuality, it has emerged. What
oh,
is it?
From the 90s?
Yeah, where it's like the new sexuality is here.
Let me find it.
I think bisexual it was time cover. Yeah.
Yes.
It has
so
emerged.
Good.
Here yeah. we go. 1995 Time cover, very iconic, bisexuality, not gay, not straight, a new sexual identity emerges.
There it is.
There
wow,
it is.
Wow, 1995, the year I was born. They were like,
just
very interesting.
This person has arrived.
Not a coincidence, I don't think.
Right.
It was actually Newsweek. It was not Time.
Newsweek.
And it's a very eclectic group of three people that do all look quite
bisexual. Okay. Hey.
Do say so myself.
So if you are doing this for Michael Keaton, Mitchell, would that mean that you are like a big Keaton head, would you say?
Yeah, I love he's one of my favorite actors. I'm doing this thing this year that I just like thought I'm doing it just because I thought it would be fun, where I am like chronologically watching every like movie Michael Keaton's ever been in. So I'm like halfway through it right now. I think I've watched like 36 and I have like 34 still to go because he's done like
wow.
60 things. So like kind of just like picking it away at it because I thought it would be fun.
Yeah.
And it has been. It's been kind of like half rewatches, half first time viewings. Other guys I saw when it came out, like I've watched this movie a million times, which is probably another reason why I picked it. Like this is like for me one of my like premium sort of like comfort movies. Like mm-hmm. I can throw this on and enjoy it like any time, whenever. But yeah, I'm just in the zone of Michael Keaton. So it felt like if seeing this on the list and this being too, like, I think one of his best like moments. I mean, it really was like a huge, it was like the start of like the comeback for him because he was really like in like wanderlust kind of, you know, wilderness territory mm-hmm. for a while. Like after Jack Frost, his career just kind of like took this turn where he's just playing like the dad in Herbie Fully Loaded and the dad in Post-Grad and stuff like that for a while. And then he got this, and I feel like it was a moment culturally of people being like, you know who we missed? Michael Keaton. Like
right.
seeing him just in general, but then also seeing him like having such like a dry wit to this. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like we were saying, like deployed perfectly. I think that this kind of started the upswing towards like Birdman and that being like the big like comeback for him, which is not a movie I care for, but I think he's amazing in it.
Yeah.
But it is like the nice little like start of the return for Keaton.
Yes, it is pretty incredible to see like everything. I feel like his later in career success all does seem to be kind of like reflecting back on Batman, with the exception of Spotlight. It's like you have right. Birdman, then you have Spider-Man, and then you have him like doing things off of the success of those two movies, like hopping into Dumbo or The Flash, obviously. And it's nice to see something that is like not related to that, the shadow that that casts.
Right.
Yeah, it feels like this is more even like kind of him hearkening back to like Night Shift and like the comedies that he was doing. Like, mm-hmm. like
Mr.
his
Mom.
Character, and this could exactly, like it could be his character from Mr. Mom who like just right. went down, you know, decided to enroll in Police Academy.
I was going to say, who's one of the kids in Mr. Mom? Is it anybody? No, whatever. So one of his sons.
One of them is bisexual.
Has now grown up to be
exactly.
Yes.
He has had such a fascinating career of ups and downs. He does, it's sort of like a, like we just talked about Travolta and Nicolas Cage, but they all kind of yeah. feel like they do have these similar waves where they hit these huge, yeah. huge peaks and then they go into like a valley. A lot of people forget about them. They show up, but they're not actually making anything. And then they have this huge spike, ride that for a bit, back down, and then another little up. And it feels like we're kind of riding that with Keaton. I'm curious now, sort of like where he feels like his career is going to go. Because like, obviously, let me see, what was the last movie that he was in?
He was in this movie, Goodrich. I think that was probably right. the last one.
Beetlejuice.
Yeah, I remember Knox Goes Away very clearly. I don't know why. I think like it has like kind of an amazing premise, and then it's,
I
like,
really like Knox Goes Away.
I don't think I've ever premise? Seen it, but he directed it. It's about an assassin, a contract killer who is losing his memory and like has to kind of like figure out how to like retire from the business while making sure that like he didn't essentially like forget about anybody.
Right.
Who like might be a loose end.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's weird. Keaton's directed two movies.
Yes.
That and The Merry Gentleman, which is from like 2006. And both of the movies that he's directed, he also stars in as a hitman, which
fascinating.
I was looking at, as I was, first of all, I'm always so glad when we have like someone who's doing like a deep dive on an actor on the podcast, because that's like one of the most interesting things to talk about, I feel like, is career ups and downs. And I was looking at The Merry Gentleman as I was like prepping for this, mostly because I saw that Keaton directed it, and I love movies about hitmen. Like, I love neo-noirs. And I was like, oh, this is a weird one. I don't really think it's like about anything. It is a Christmas movie.
Leaning in.
Yeah. I think it's like sad though.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was like one that he kind of stumbled into directing, and I can't remember exactly what happened, but like the director like got fired or like got sick or something, and like Keaton I think already was producing it, and then he kind of was just like, well, if I don't direct this, no, like the movie's not going to get made.
Right.
So he was like, I might as well just like give my hand at it. But I think he wasn't like super satisfied with it. And I guess makes sense that he didn't direct again for like 20 years. But then just, I guess, really wanted to do Knox Goes Away.
As someone that worked in development for a few years, the actual like actor as director conversation comes up so often, especially now, because like it's really hard to find a, not for lack of good directors, it's really hard to find a director and a star who like each other, who the studio systems also agree are both like considered
beneficial,
like risk averse. Yeah, it's exactly beneficial for the package. Like it's like, it's so difficult because they have very high standards for both stars and directors. So a lot of the time when you attach a star, you'll be like, hey, any chance you would like to make this your directorial debut? Which I guess like shows how little I guess we care about the craft, and that they're like, I mean, it would be great if you could direct it. So then we just like don't have to worry about it. And it's like, yeah,
anybody
be,
just direct
a total
it. Exactly.
Shit director. Yeah. Like, yeah. Exactly.
It
like,
just feels so good as a director to hear that, because you're like, you know what?
Yeah.
It's easy. You don't got to do anything. It's just it, like you point like, the camera.
This actor can just do it.
I cannot tell you how often it came up. Like if any actor like had a whisper of being like, oh, you know, I've toyed around with some stuff, we'd be like, do you want to direct?
Oh my God.
That makes sense to me, because like I feel like you're seeing more and more like actor directors. Like if you look at any Tribeca Film Festival lineup from the last like 3 years, it is just flooded with actors making their directing debuts for a movie that 3 years later you have never heard of, did not even know that that actor directed a movie.
Nope.
Like Michael Shannon directed this movie called Eric LaRue.
I can't even think about this.
Michael Shannon is one of Jordan's favorite actors of all time.
So I love Michael Shannon. I was debating doing what you, so I did Channing Tatum for your, like my, I did a Channing Tatum version of your Keaton.
That's fun.
Which was so fun.
Interesting career.
And you did Tom Cruise.
Like 40, and I did Cruise, which was,
Cruise is good. Yeah, that's fantastic. Just like banger after banger.
Yeah. But I started doing Shannon, but he had an overwhelming amount of just like 2 minute performances. Yeah. And I was like, I can't be watching this 2 hour really bad movie just to get 2 minutes of Shannon. Yeah.
That's part of the appeal of doing it with somebody like Cruise, where it's like, okay, they're the lead in basically every movie. So
exactly.
Like, you're getting it. I just watched, weirdly, I was a big fan of Eminem in high school, which is when this movie came out, but I never saw 8 Mile when it came out. And so I just watched it for the first time like a week ago. And I had no idea Michael Shannon is just like having sex with his mom, Kim Basinger, in that movie.
Anthony Mackie. Always forget that he's in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How did it hold? I haven't watched that movie since high school.
I think it's pretty good. Very formulaic, but I think it holds up solid. I don't think Eminem's like the greatest actor. He won like a lot of like breakthrough kind of thing, or he won like the MTV like breakthrough performer thing. I think that he is definitely when he's up against like Michael Shannon's in a small role, Anthony Mackie's in a small role, like Brittany Murphy is like his romantic interest. Mm-hmm. I think that he's definitely getting overshadowed by everybody kind of
and
around
he's getting
him.
Some help. He's getting some help.
Yeah, exactly.
A little bit of mom spaghetti to help him out, you know.
Okay.
That's Shannon, the first scene of the movie. It throws up on his sweater.
I guess I'm going to rewatch that.
are you though?
I low key, it's been on my Letterboxd watch list for like 4 years. So
there is always a point where I'm like, Jordan and I, we have like really similar taste. We have like really similar backgrounds a lot of the time. Verges. And then like there's always something you're like, yeah, I kind of like dying to rewatch 8 Mile. And I'm like, all right. Because this, I will say, like the other guys, not my kind of movie.
Very much no.
But this is actually, believe it or not, the second time I have seen The Other Guys. That is shocking.
I saw it. Yeah, I saw it logged as a rewatch.
Yes.
No heart, though, on Letterboxd. So no. Maybe a little bit telling.
Telling of Brooke.
I feel neutral about this movie, much like how I felt about Talladega Nights, Jordan.
Yeah.
We can put it in the same. I'm sure I've said it before, so it's okay. It's not like this is the first time people are going to hear it and come for me. I really don't like Anchorman. We'll consider rewatching it maybe to see if things have changed. Sure. That's how I felt about The Other Guys. I was like, you know, I'm a more evolved person now. I'll probably find it like less grating. Not really. Sorry.
It's our perennial back and forth, Mitchell. It's like
on I just really struggle with like male driven comedy. Is that the best way to describe it?
Yes.
Like dude bro solid, comedy. Yeah.
Well, because you were in LA literally this week mm-hmm. and we were talking about, I've been trying to convince Brooke to watch Nirvana the band, the movie, and it has just been, I'm pushing a boulder up a hill, you know?
Yeah,
and like, eventually I'm going to get there.
It's because I don't trust you.
I think you're probably making the right move, Brooke. Knowing that.
I will, you know what?
Not to take sides, but knowing that that's how you feel. I don't know. I didn't like that movie either, though, personally.
Oh, hey, there we go.
But okay. I don't like Anchorman or Talladega Nights. So other guys sort of like the outlier. I do really like Step Brothers. McKay has those two outliers, but like generally it is a like form of comedy that I generally also like don't super gravitate towards.
This is interesting because like Talladega Nights is like the pinnacle for me of all those, followed by Step Brothers. I think Anchorman I would put last, honestly. Like I think it's fine, but I think it was like so culturally overwhelming that I like kind of hit the brakes on it a bit.
Yeah.
This one I think is like I forgot how ingrained in my brain it was and how much my father, and now I'm realizing how much like my dad was in like into these movies, like specifically Talladega and The Other Guys, because I just remember him quoting this movie more than I remember watching the movie, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
did he quote the peacock line a lot? That seems to be the...
The peacock line. He had a Prius at the time, so you can bet he was calling his Prius what they call the Prius in this. All sorts of things like that.
All jokes aside, this is a very interesting movie about the symbols of masculinity and what we choose to do with them, right down to having your real gun taken away and replaced with a fake gun, which is the equivalent of getting your dick cut off.
And then eventually replaced with a rape whistle, which also kind of ties right into that, too.
Exactly. And I am not so... I am not... such a hater that I don't understand the, I think, like, the inherent interest to being like, yeah, they might not be, like, totally, like, undercutting that theme, but it is certainly, like, a specific and, like, intentional theme of this movie.
For sure.
Again, even if it's not really, like, undercut. But I think you can read between the lines and you can uplift it and you can be like, yeah, like, this does have something interesting to say in some way about kind of like how we, when we feel, when men feel like not adequate, how they prop themselves up with the symbols around them, like their cars and their accessories and the women in their lives.
It's interesting. It's like, because as like a buddy cop movie, we've talked about some buddy cop movies and like the interplay
many,
and like the
actually
like the homoeroticism that thus stems from them. However, I'm trying to think if there's ever been, like, obviously this is sort of making fun of the buddy cop dynamic, but I don't know, has there ever been a satire of a buddy cop that then explicitly made them gay?
No.
Or no, not
imagine
yet, right?
Imagine if there was. Because weirdly, I think something like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is maybe the
closest. Like the closest? By having a literal gay guy.
Yes, yeah. By undercutting like that specific dynamic, because we talk about buddy cop movies a lot, and I think that there's like not just from the queer element, but also the like a lot of it of them are about like your identity being tied to your job, and also like the way that you move through the world. Like I feel like the general Lethal Weapon combo of like good cop, crazy cop, mild-mannered cop, not mild-mannered cop, is like it doubles as like a fish out of water sort of like style comedy. Even stuff like I think that there's been like a decent amount of gender swap buddy cop movies as well. Even stuff like The Heat or Hot Pursuit, God forbid, like have the it's that same sort of like how do you move through the world and like what do the buddies in question tend to actually like teach each other about the other person's lifestyle, which is why Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is like arguably the most interesting in terms of like dynamic. But I will say, Mitchell, you're much more of a, you have an encyclopedic knowledge of cinema. So if you can think of anything that we're
I can't think of anything. I like the amount of like, I'm trying to even think of movies where cops are explicitly, like male cops are explicitly gay. Like
almost
I feel
never.
Like the list is, it's got to be pretty slim.
I just looked up like ones from this, the 20, because I was like, it feels like even buddy cop films have kind of died off a bit.
Because nobody really wants to watch movies about cops anymore.
I don't know. You know, maybe cops are good. I'm just kidding. That was a joke.
I mean, I would say like fortunately or unfortunately, like weirdly cop movies have come down on, I promise I'll keep this brief, like the side of the culture war, and that you have shit like Dragged Across Concrete all the way up to like now, like people are making just like absurd movies that are like not real movies about
there's one from
the
this
police
year.
System
it's the Wrecking Crew, the Dave Bautista Momoa movie.
Oh yeah.
And then from last year, Zootopia 2, which technically counts as a buddy cop movie, although that's
it
a buddy romance
does. I would
then the two Bad Boys movies, which I ride for the new whatever the 2024 Ride or Die, because I liked the camera shit that they did in that, I don't know if I ride for the movie.
Ride or Die. I don't even remember that.
It's the one where they have the camera pointing at Will Smith, and then it's on a gimbal, and then it flips to his POV, and it keeps swapping back and forth. It was just some cool camera stuff that I hadn't seen before. But other than that, I was like, you know.
I confuse it still because the third Bad Boys movie that came out in 2020 is called Bad Boys for Life, which why would that not be the fourth one? What are we doing?
Oh my God. Brooke, we're also forgetting like the Jump Street movies, which are like the closest maybe to gay.
Yeah, actually the Jump Street. Yeah, that's a really good point. I think Jump Street does definitely come, the nearest to.
Right.
Yes. And we talked extensively about, is it the first one? Or is it
we talked about both.
No, I know. Which one has the gay scene?
Fuck, is it the second one? I think it's probably the second one.
The second one, because I think it's when they're in college.
Yeah, they're leaning into it. Yeah.
Like, that's fun. That's obviously the should I see the Wrecking Crew? Jordan, did you see the Wrecking Crew?
No, I didn't see the Wrecking Crew.
I don't know.
Maybe. You could always watch, I'm looking at this list here, RIPD2 Rise of the Damned. I didn't even know the second one came out.
Real.
It is 2022.
Oh, man, dude. All right. Yeah. But point being, they have definitely gone into more of like the action world. Wow, carrying over truly zero people. From RIPD, direct-to-video.
Like this ties into sort of the action movie conversation we had, where it's like buddy cop movies, and that style was then replaced by superhero movies, where your buddy cop was Spider-Man and Iron Man teaming up, or it was Falcon and the Winter Soldier, et cetera, et cetera. You know what I mean? Like, they found ways to move these categories of films that we had into the superhero and or other genres, where then everything kind of became one.
Yeah,
you know, for better or worse,
into a larger genre,
right? Yeah,
yeah. Because Shane Black like sort of did exactly that. Yeah, with Iron Man 3, and like so going from the Lethal Weapons to Kiss Kiss Bang Bang to
ultimately
Iron Man 3. Yeah, because I think Adam McKay like even kind of said when they were like ideating on this, like his biggest pause was like, nobody cares about buddy cop movies anymore. Like nobody like makes them anymore. So how do you like make one that like makes sense like in like the 2010 world? And that was kind of like how he came around to the idea of the like financial kind of scheme as like the crime that's happening in it, rather than a more like outdated like them trying to stop like bank robbers or like whatever, like trying to do something that felt more modern and in place, which is, I'm curious how you guys feel about like that like aspect of the movie. Like, it's like interesting.
I like that aspect of it.
I'm so in on it.
I think that we are in the minority, because like a lot of people are like, oh, and like the obviously the like villain plot line is so stupid, and I'm like, I actually do think it's one more interesting than whatever a standard bank robbery or whatever. And then secondly, actually ties in very well to the desk jockey element of this movie. Like, that is who they would be going after.
100%.
It ties too into everything that you were saying earlier, Brooke, too, about like the like machismo of it. Like, they're not these cops, you know, the Dwayne Johnson and Samuel L. Jackson like type of cops are not like, they're not paying attention to, you know, the pencil pushing, like, you know, guys trying to do all the bank fraud and like all this kind of stuff. And that's why these people get away with it, because it's not flashy and it's not like, you know, it's not the kind of crimes that you get in newspapers for bringing down. So like, they're doing the high speed chases at the beginning of the movie and whatever. And I think that, but this is the shit that's ruining our country.
No, literally, I'm like, you should actually have more movies about Ponzi schemes and white collar crime, because that is what is like destroying and like the rot of us right now. And it's like, we talked about Talladega Nights earlier, and I went on a little tirade, not tirade, but like a little soapbox, and I talked about like how that movie was like very good at cutting the Bush era US nationalism. And I think like this is where McKay works best in his political commentary, is when he has a genre trapping and he can package his political ideas within it. So like in this, it's obviously very political by talking about Ponzi schemes, and like that was obviously very much on the mind at this time, given the recession and given everything that had just happened. So I think like he's able to bring in something that's super important while also like having it be something accessible for like dads and kids and teens to watch. Like, I remember when I saw this for the first time, I was like, oh shit, what's a Ponzi scheme? Oh, let me learn about this, blah, blah, blah. You know, so you actually get to discover more and it actually awakens something in you versus it just being so in your face that you're kind of like, you put up walls against it. I don't know. I think this is McKay like in his best zone and I wish he kind of stayed in it.
Yeah, I think this is way more successful than something like Vice or Don't Look Up or like The Big Short. It's like after, like, it's interesting. I was reading some interviews with him from the time that this came out, and like in interviews during the press run for this movie, he was even like, I feel like that element of this movie wasn't super successful and I kind of missed the mark on that. But like I had like good, like these were my intentions with like putting that in there, but I feel like I wasn't super successful in like embedding it into this. And like, I know some people found it a little bit dull, like whatever, which is, it's interesting one to just like hear a filmmaker on like the press run promoting a movie being like, I feel like this element of it. Yeah. But like, it's even more interesting that, so he does Anchorman 2 like right after this and then The Big Short right after that. Like he felt like he like didn't quite crack it, and then he's like, oh, this is how I crack it, is to just like just go so hard on sort of the like his three, The Big Short, Vice, Don't Look Up, I feel like each one of those gets progressively more like self-congratulatory in a way that is just like so off-putting, even as somebody who like on the whole politically agrees with, you know, what like the position that those movies are taking, but it's like
it's actually kind of it's a kind of impressive that it's like he like, you know, was, and I mean obviously I think whatever, all three of those got nominated for best picture, like it's not like they were flops, but I do think it's kind of impressive that like for speaking to an audience that almost wholly agrees with him, most people I feel like are like, and that kind of sucked. I like The Big Short, and then it feels like he just took the wrong lesson.
Yeah, I think each one like gets like progressively like worse. I think The Big Short is still, it is like, it's accessible, it's really entertaining, I think, and I think like, I think Carell's amazing in it, I think Gosling's really fun in it. It just like the like Margot Robbie in the bath, you know, teaching us stuff, it's just like, come on guy, like we don't, like what are we doing?
Like at the end of this where they're like, okay, and by the way, here's how a Ponzi scheme works, I'm like, okay, fine, good, yeah, that's okay, it's not
exactly, that's so just the right amount
down. And it's like, I don't even like, I know, yeah, like Big Short is an example of, it's like, okay, I see how you wanted to do this in but, well, what I will say is that Adam McKay has not yet announced whatever he is doing next. I don't think.
What is he? So, like, last TV for him was the Lakers show,
I think. Oh, right. He did that. Yeah. I was trying to think. I was trying to think earlier, like, what was the last stuff that he did?
Winning
because
Time.
Because it was, like, Don't Look Up was so long ago.
Yeah. Cool. And so he really
did the
just,
pilot
like,
for Succession, Winning Time.
He did that.
Right.
Yeah, but he has not yet announced, except like as a producer, right?
Right.
He has not yet announced like what his next kind of like in directing endeavor is, which makes me think that he's maybe trying to like pivot a little bit.
That would make sense. Yeah.
I could see it. He and Apatow, I feel like, are fascinating like dual trains, you know what I mean? Where like their careers sort of have similar ups and downs, where Apatow now feels like he's doing, or he had the bubble, and now it feels like he's really trying to like pivot back to like his roots. And so I wonder if McKay is going to have a similar sort of film. Like, does he do?
There's this one,
an Anchorman. I don't know.
There's this. We'll see. It's only in a Deadline article. Like, who knows what could happen with this thing? But Michael Shanks, who directed Together, has like some sort of sci-fi comedy that McKay is supposed to be directing.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, knows like what that even.
He had that serial killer movie with Robert Pattinson. Let me remind myself what it was called. Average Height, Average Build. That was like supposed to be like political satire, serial killer, and then he scrapped it, I think, to do Don't Look Up. And I was like, that's so much more interesting. Go back to that. Like that, I don't.
So like sort of like a American Psycho kind of
or
thing,
maybe like The Killer, but like with but yeah, I feel like American Psycho is probably the closest,
but like
right?
American Psycho with Pattinson, I'm in. Like that sounds interesting, and Pattinson obviously would be giving a crazy fucking accent performance, so
I'm Hannah. I've lost 75 pounds in 20 months with GLP-1s, plus diet and exercise. On Row, I've gone from struggling to run a mile to running farther every day. You can access FDA-approved GLP-1s online. Get the support you need to reach your weight loss goals. Go to row.co/weight to see if you qualify. I'm a paid Row partner. 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 3.1% in placebo arm. Rx only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/safety.
Match, yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
Before we really dive into the plot of the other guys, which obviously we are not really talking about that much because there's not much of one. Have either of you seen Daddy's Home, the other Ferrell and Wahlberg collab?
I saw the first one in theaters. I did not see the second one because I abhorred the first one. Yeah.
I did not. I've seen the clip that went around Twitter when the second one came out of who the fuck is the dad of Will Ferrell?
John Lithgow?
Of John Lithgow meeting Mel Gibson, because people were like, look at this nightmare. And I was like, this is a nightmare. So, but that's all I've seen of it.
The only thing that I can say about those movies is that I saw the Daddy's Home 2 trailer 18 billion times for some reason, and that unfortunately Wahlberg is kind of hot in the first one.
Brooke coming out with a take.
I haven't seen it, but he's kind of hot. I don't know.
Will Ferrell's back on the brain though. Like, I just watched the Las Culturistas Awards, obviously, and he's just feels like he's, and he was hosting SNL again. It feels like he's kind of gearing back up for a nice kind of cycle.
I feel so bad every time I talk about Ferrell, because I'm like, I think that he is like, he's someone who like walks the walk, talks the talk, is clearly like an amazing person, an amazing producer, like really kind of like champions voices that wouldn't normally be championed. And every time I see him in something, I'm like, it's not really working for me. I feel so bad. I hope that if he ever, God forbid, listens to this podcast, that he knows that I really, really admire him and respect him. I just really struggle.
It's okay. One of us can carry the torch.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he kind of has been really like playing it easy for a little while.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, Wahlberg, on the other hand, is not.
God, no, yeah. The amount of like press emails I get for a new Mark Wahlberg project that I've never heard of until that very moment.
Oh my God, I just literally was like, what is he doing this year? Balls up,
yeah, with Paul Walter Hauser.
I was released. It already came out. Wow.
Yeah, it came out a few months ago. I think it was an Apple.
Amazon, a Prime original.
Amazon, of course. The Family Plan movies that he's been in, yes. Two of them. Those are Apple movies that I see the ads for all the time when
I actually put on
Apple TV.
The Family Plan is like, not, I mean, I've never seen it. I don't think it's good, but they made a second one. Like,
I think the streams on them are very successful.
Oh, I'm sure it has family in the title. They're like, we can all watch this together.
That's all we have. Yeah. That's all we have. It reminds me of like Yes Day with Jenna Ortega is like the only person I remember from those. And was Wahlberg also in that like, it's kind of like a National Treasure-esque thing about like trying to find the Fountain of Youth?
Oh, no, that was Krasinski.
Yeah.
Oh, My bad, guys.
Sort of the
Guy Ritchie Fountain. Yeah, it's just called Fountain of Youth.
Natalie Goddamn Portman is in that movie. I was like, what is happening here? It's a Guy Ritchie. That's why
we talked about like this. I don't know if it was in real life or not, but like he was obviously in Play Dirty, the new Shane Black, a movie that neither of us saw, and we're both
sad. Yeah, I should never be missing a Shane Black movie. Right. And I was like kind of excited for it up until the trailer came out. And then I was like, this looks.
Yeah, I watched that. It was very, very mid. He was also in Flight Risk, which Mel Gibson directed like two years ago.
That crazy reveal of his wig.
Yes. The wig. Yeah.
Unfortunately, a really good concept. I am too.
Well,
too
I was bummed. I did see Flight. Despite everything, despite Gibson directing it, Wahlberg starring in it, I was kind of excited for Flight Risk because I was like, this is just kind of a cool concept.
But
it's also not a
pretty great concept. Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm like too writer-brained now that like every time I see something, I'm like, God damn, that is like a really good premise that's like being wasted on like, you know, bad specs of a movie.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, the other guys, 2010, this movie did very well. We'll talk about the box office more in depth, but it unseated Inception from number one after like 4 weeks, which could have just been coincidence. All right. Like, you know, everybody had seen Inception by that point, but like it did really well. So,
It was a moment.
I do find this movie funny.
Okay.
Yes, I said it. In particular, I think that the Dwayne Johnson, Samuel L. Jackson portion is pretty great.
Aim for the bushes is timeless.
I love that it is never explained why they decide to jump off that roof.
I think it's pretty odd. I think it's just because they realize they're like, we're not, this isn't it. We didn't get him. It's the end of the line for us. We just got to kill ourselves, you know?
Oh, you don't think there's failed. Any bravado of like, we're totally going to survive this?
Oh,
that's my assumption is I think that they think that somehow they're like they're super heroic enough to
I like
make
that.
It happen.
I mean,
they're
unkillable. I love the cut though to the down and you're like, not a bush in sight.
Not a bush in sight. I didn't know if it was kind of like a speaking of Shane Black. I didn't know if it was kind of like a Ryan Gosling and the Nice Guys thing, where he's like, "I think I'm unkillable." I don't think
that is also great.
Either or, but I think it's so funny that it's just like, "Nope, we got nothing."
Splat.
And that like they do not like, you know, Farrell and Wahlberg really like fail to fill the hole that is left. In the NYPD, like, it's more like those criminals just kind of, like, go away.
Yeah.
For lack of, you know, plot reasons. Like, they're there, and then it's like, whatever, it's not useful. We're all about Steve and his financial scheming. But, like, it is this kind of, like, fun little, like, first act.
Yeah, it gets you going.
The movie. Yeah.
It's good playing on like The Rock and Jackson's strengths, I think, as like showboating, hyper masculine men.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. And sort of the like contrast between, which is interesting. I think like Wahlberg, for someone who is very often self absorbed in the roles that he takes, it is nice when he has something like this that undercuts him. I think about like Boogie Nights. This,
unfortunately, he's, you know, really good in this movie.
He's kind of great. Yeah.
I mean, the burden, I think, is that this, I feel like him doing this directly led to like all the other comedies that he's like done since then. Because it's like Wahlberg works so well in comedy. Let's put him in all of the comedies. But yeah, I think he's amazing in this.
Yeah.
He needs to be playing someone who is not the coolest guy
exactly
in the room, but is desperately trying to be. I think when you put him in somewhere where he's like actually the badass, it just like doesn't, he can't live up to what he thinks of himself, maybe.
That's why The Departed works, because like he thinks he's the coolest in the room, but he's a fucking loser.
And
you
it's
know?
The same here. I'm a peacock. You gotta let me fly. Yeah, and like his anger issues are hilarious.
Yeah, it's like it, and it's funny like every time that it like has little moments where it reveals like he's actually pretty capable like physically, but like he just has these things about him that will like never, like he's never socially like cool enough to like achieve the status that he's looking for, even though he kind of like has all the skills. I love the running bit of like all of the stuff that he's learned how to do, like ironically to make fun of, like him learning
ballet
to like clown on like his like ex and like stuff like that. Like, I just think that it's really funny. It works every time for me.
This is other than Michael Keaton's bisexual DJ son, the kind of like runner of Wahlberg being like, I learned ballet so that I could make fun of. I won't repeat the slurs, but like make fun of like this gay kid that lived down the street.
It's good.
And like that's, learns it proficiently.
He's really good.
He looks good doing it.
I assume it's a body double, but like I was like, I really want a full wide so that we can prove that they actually did request that Wahlberg like
learn ballet
for this.
I mean, this movie's chock full of runners and like keep calling like callbacks, like the every bad guy being like a part of the Colombian drug cartel, like Wahlberg being an idiot and he just keeps assuming it, and where Farrell's like, what the fuck are you on about, is pretty good.
Yeah,
I mean, the Allens, you know, the Eva Mendes thing is, your mileage may vary, but it is, I think, like another memorable sequence that I feel like always goes back around. in a way, you know.
I fucking can't stand it.
I knew that was coming. I knew that was coming.
It's always my hangup, guys. I'm sorry. I just ruin everybody's fun every time. That there's, I don't know, there's this meme that, like, I feel like has circulated so many times on the internet now, which is like me when I'm trying to have fun, but I can't stop noticing how, like, misogyny slips through the cracks of the function. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
You
no,
know
the like, one that I'm
talking about? Yes. It's that girl looking in the mirror being like,
Yeah.
That's how I feel whenever there's that a scene. Runner where it's like, oh, my smoking hot wife, who I think is super ugly.
Right.
Come on. I actually don't mind the runner of her going, sending her mom.
That's
back
a and good
I love
bit.
That goddamn
that's
bit.
I think that's funny. That's funny. And then, hey, guess what? They get to actually like have a functional relationship. I just feel like this has the, this is 2010, right? It has It has that mid-aughts, I can't stand my wife comedy
it
to
does.
It.
Ball and chain.
I just have to ruin everybody's fun every time. I'm sorry.
I like the Pimps Don't Cry stuff. I like the absurdity of like their backstory a lot.
Same.
I think Eva Mendes is so funny in this.
She's so locked in.
Kills. Like I'm happy for her that she's happy like living the mom life and everything. You know, like that's
but
you know
right,
whatever
her.
You want to do. I think she's such a great actor, and like it's a shame that like she's not in movies anymore because she's so fucking funny in this. And like I what. Like, definitely 100% hear you, Brooke. Like, what works for me, like, with the Eva Mendes stuff is, like, because you have Wahlberg's, like, reaction to that. And that's what, like, always makes that stuff funny to me is, like, that Wahlberg is, like, there to kind of, like, button the absurdity of it. If it was, like, just Farrell, like, shitting on, like, his wife for being ugly,
it's
like, I
so
think
nasty.
That it would, it would, like, feel like a drag. But, like, it works for me because, like, it's... Wahlberg's there to like be the audience playing into like the absurdity of it. But like the I think the best anything with the Eva Mendes stuff is the grandma.
It's so
and,
good.
Like just the
it's
please
great.
Stop making me say these things.
Progressively nastier and nastier things.
Yes.
Did you because
I'm not gonna be mad about it. That's
no, you
that's
can be
all
mad.
I'll say. It's
you
okay.
sometimes
it's
don't
good.
Like Will Ferrell's like long runners.
Did I don't. I have a short attention.
Did
span.
The tuna and the lion one work for you? Because that one always kills me.
No.
I knew it.
As like a huge lover of the movie, that one does fall a little bit flat for me.
It
too.
Works for me. I love just, it just keeps going. I'm just like, they let him cook and I am like, I like when someone just goes off the rails. It works. I don't know why.
I'm so glad that it does work for you. And like, let me be clear, my opinions are subjective and I don't think that I am necessarily right. But yeah, I really struggle with like long form bits, long form runners. I prefer a runner that like goes through the whole movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't. I don't know. It's the Apatow thing.
The working mouth like a puppet.
Yeah.
That one. I feel like that stuck in my lingo. Like, I feel like maybe that was the first time I had heard something like that. When I was this young, I don't know. But the like when he sticks shove my arm up your ass and work your mouth like a puppet.
Oh, right.
I feel like that goes, I mean, that maybe didn't originate in this movie, but I feel like that is just a constant line of people saying something like that.
What's the desk pop?
Oh, yeah, desk pops.
You know, that, to me, is that's like my favorite. I
desk
think
pops
that is
are
very
great.
Fucking funny. And... Yeah, like I as someone that also, well, technically my mom was the one that drove a Prius in high school, but the family car was a Prius and I endured a lot of jokes about how gay and a Prius is. Like everybody hated on the Prii. Nobody liked those things. I love my
now
little
I
Prius.
See a Prius and I'm like, God, I would kill for a Prius. The mileage you'd get on that baby, you know?
And by the way, they're expensive now.
I like, know.
Nobody appreciated.
Nobody appreciated what they had.
Yes,
it's messed up. No, that it makes sense what works for you and what doesn't in the movie. I feel like while watching it, because I knew we were doing it for the pod, obviously, I was like watching it through the Brooke prism, where I was like, okay, will Brooke laugh at this? Will Brooke not laugh at this?
Wow.
Let's find out.
Oh man.
But I'm glad you liked Wahlberg.
You know what is a joke that I really love is when, is it the pawn shop or like the loan bank, whatever, explodes. They like drive out to Jersey to go to that place and it explodes. And they're like, oh my God, how do people walk away from this in movies? This is crazy. This is just like in Star Wars.
Yes.
And Wahlberg is like, don't you dare say that about Star Wars. That was all accurate. I think that's very funny. So there you go. Really
good. I like the stuff like that a lot where it is like the bits that are like I don't think it plays so, it's obviously not like a satire to the extent that like something like Naked Gun is like just like a full spoof on like the genre, but I do like the things that lean into like, or just sort of like lightly touch on like the absurdity of the tropes and like just let them kind of like riff on stuff like that. I feel like that's kind of successful like every time that it hits. I'm curious what, especially Brooke, but for both of you guys, like what you think about the whole scene where they go to see Will Ferrell's ex, Christineth, her husband, if that like works for you guys. Because it's harder to watch now given how Brett Gelman has behaved on social media in the last 3 years. Before that, that whole sequence cracks me the hell up. Like,
I think
the
it's very
screaming,
funny.
Like, you're gonna come back here and sleep with my wife. Yeah. Like, I think really, it
when
really
it's like,
works.
They don't run away far enough.
Yeah, them catching up to them is so funny.
I always say, like, the more absurdist, the better.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I want it to be as weird as possible.
Yeah, even just like the like, yeah, her name is Christina. Like,
why is her name Christina?
Well, yeah, you're in my house. I'm like, you get my wife's name right.
It is that that runner kills me. The catching up, I think, is like one of the hardest times I laugh, though, because you aren't expecting it. You think it's totally over, and then it's like a horror
transitioned
movie.
I don't know what it says about me that I was like literally taking down, because I was like, we're gonna talk about masculinity, we're gonna talk about like all this stuff, and then I was like, okay, I have 3 things to talk about. Michael Keaton's son who's going to NYU to explore his bisexuality and become a DJ. We have Mark Wahlberg learning how to ballet dance sarcastically so that he could make fun of gay kids, and then we have a bunch of homeless guys having an orgy unspecified.
Dirty Mike and the Boys.
Played by Adam McKay. That's the Adam McKay cameo. And I was like, okay, we got some stuff.
I mean, it's a runner, they keep trying to fuck in that car.
I do love when they're like, when they're by like the dock and they like, you know, shoo them away, and as they're running away they're shouting back, we are gonna have sex
again. I mean, like, we love the Prius.
And it's like a gay joke that's not a gay joke, where it's like Dirty Mike and the Boys, and it's just about the fact that there's people fucking in the car.
That's what it is. It's the absurdity of it.
I don't mind a gay joke. You just gotta do it well.
It's the thing to what you were saying, like the bisexual, like Keaton bringing up his son being bisexual. Yes. The joke isn't that his son is bisexual. The joke is that, like, why would you even bring that up? Like, now.
It's just so funny. I appreciate that they're realistic about New York housing costs. Like, you do have to work too, or New York university costs, I guess. You do have to work 2 jobs to put a child through NYU.
100%.
One of the many reasons I didn't go there. Not because I didn't get in. Definitely not
reason.
That.
I mean, if you were talking about the masculinity, I guess, in the interplay, it's like also like Alan is like kind of disinterested in all women, even though he kind of constantly pulls, whereas like Terry on the flip side is like the hyper-masculine, so into women, but it becomes like...
better
chill
for Wahlberg, because they're like rejecting him and he's like, this is so sad. And I think, like, obviously, like, them being like, wow, I think I just made my first friend, as they get into like the depths of being like, we're stuck together because literally nobody else wants to work with us.
I love an underdog story, like seeing them, like, it's, I love like an underdog story, but also like the fact, I think part of what makes the movie work so well is that like Ferrell is playing the comedy, but he is mostly playing like the straight man, and like all of the like the tropes and the machismo and everything, like, it works because he is so just doesn't want to do, like, having a movie like this centered around a guy who couldn't be happier just sitting at a desk like crunching numbers, I think it's inherently really funny, like him being like pushed kind of into some of this stuff, and like it is the fish out of water stuff that you were talking about earlier, and like I think that him just not even wanting to engage with like that, but still being like pretty good at it too, like when he's forced into it, I think that it undercuts a lot of the tropes and everything really well.
Yeah. I audited my parents at 11.
Yes.
Believe me,
there were some discrepancies.
Yeah.
Carol's really funny in this.
He is the one that determines that there is something fishy afoot with finances somewhere in the stock
pension
trade.
Fund.
There's also like weirdly enough, and it's like not stunt casting, but it's before all of them were famous. There's like four kind of like, oh my god, that guy, like runners. Once they start going around like trying to talk to anyone that's connected to Steve Coogan, it's Ben Schwartz.
Yep.
Either like right in the middle of Parks and Rec or like just pre Parks and Rec. Zach Woods. And then Chris Gethard.
Yeah. The Gethard, I was like, wait, hold on. I think I like just listened to him on Blank Check, and I was like, oh my god, what are you doing here?
Oh my god, what is he doing here? It's so it's so exciting to see him not cut out of a movie.
I know.
Isn't he like famously cut out of like six different movies or something? It's because like there's just like so many scenes like this where it's like
when you're put in a scene
someone
like this,
in for like literally one scene, and then like eventually that scene gets left on the cutting room floor because they did five like variations of like probably a scene created that exact same like function in the story.
Well, it's like the bribing sequence montage where I'm sure they had probably like 30 different bribing things that they whipped up, but like you got the best like three or whatever, which again, that sequence does also work for me. I don't know
when they come in and Coogan's watching the porn and it's like like a pirate making a woman walk the plank and like that's what he's into,
right?
I just
it's good.
I think Brooke's giving a face that it does not work for Brooke, and I think that's valid.
But you know what does work for me is that he bribes them with Broadway tickets, which is what everybody should be bribed with.
And it's funny. It's funny that it keeps working on them too, and like them like realize.
I have two choices: Mamma Mia or Jersey Boys.
Right, right.
It would work
then
on
they
me.
Go to Jersey Boys,
and
then, right?
Like, yeah, just having like a full like 30-second like Jersey Boys clip in the movie.
Yes. I think that we were bribed.
Yeah, it's so good. Believe me, there's a lot of it that works for me. There's just probably about as much that also doesn't work for me. But it's okay. It's okay. I have never seen Step Brothers, as I think I mentioned on the Talladega Nights episode.
Yeah.
And I think I have to watch it because then I will have watched all of the McKay Farrells. And
I'd be curious if that one would work for you more, because I think that it is like that one plays into the absurdity in a way that I think that you maybe would have a better chance of liking than some of the other ones. And it really doesn't have, as far as I can think, like any of the like macho like bro-y kind of stuff. It is very much like just two guys who are like very like Arrested Development, like,
which I love. I
think that's silly and it's fun, like them just behaving like
and I love teams. Richard Jenkins so much.
Maybe the best line in the movie that I will not spoil, but
yeah,
like,
that's the thing is I don't really know much about it other than exactly what you just said, which that it's like kind of like Arrested Development.
Jenkins crushes in that movie.
He's so good.
I'll report back.
Do you like Steve Coogan if we're just talking about like comedians? Because I feel like he
not really enough. I feel like every time I watch a Steve Coogan, I just wish that it was oh my god, this is so embarrassing. Josie and the Pussycats.
Alan Cumming.
I wish it was Alan Cumming. Every time I watch a Steve Coogan, I'm like, this would be better if it was Alan Cumming.
You see, like, this other British comedian.
Yeah, exactly. But to be fair, I don't think I have, like, historical knowledge of
like, I never saw his Steve Alan Coogan. Partridge stuff, so I feel like I missed a key part of his, like, identity. But I feel I feel like we first saw him in like Around the World in 80 Days or like Night at the Museum. And then I got caught up with like a 24-hour Party People or stuff. Like, I like him, but he is like, he has such a specific lane. I feel like he plays in American movies and comedies.
Obviously, Night at the Museum is like
transcendent cinema.
Amazing.
Him and Owen Wilson are great to get like paired together.
They're gay as hell.
They are super good. One day. We haven't done it yet. I can't believe nobody's picked it yet. But like, so yeah, I just don't have, and I want to be clear. I accept my limitations. But I just don't think I have the historic comedy knowledge or interest that really lets me like lean into a lot of this kind of stuff, or really like understand where people came from and like why this is like a good role or a bad role. Or this or that. You know,
he's interesting casting in this. I was born in England. My mom's English and like her whole family's English. They still like all live over there and everything. So like I have like I saw a lot of Alan Partridge, like a lot of like TV stuff that he was on or whatever. I've never really been the biggest like Steve Coogan person with respect. Shout out like mutual friend of Mila Lee Vecchino, who is obsessed with Steve Coogan. I've never been super huge on him, but he works for me in like doses. But it like very interesting casting in this, and I think has some good moments, like the bribing. I think he's really funny there.
Yeah, the bribing's incredible.
Believe me,
he's good at little shit.
Yeah, yeah. I am. I have no qualms with the villain in this. I think it works surprisingly well. I like when he's getting arrested and he's like, oh my god, am I being punked? This is crazy, because he just like cannot believe these fucking people.
Yeah, the only way that he would be arrested.
Yeah.
The again, Rob Riggle showing up in this with Damon Wayans Jr. Damon Wayans we just saw also in Barb and Star, right?
Yes.
Where he's fantastic. But Rob Riggle, I feel like, is so indicative of this era of comedy there, where I feel
it's like right after Hangover.
Exactly. He shows up for a few minutes.
Don't tase me, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah. Classic. When we're all, I think, like a little too online to the point where, do you guys remember that KJ Apa?
The KJ Apa as Jimmy Stewart, Rob Riggle trailer. Yes, of course.
And it was like a legitimate movie, and everyone was like, this honestly wouldn't be so bad on its own. But the fact that he like
you cut to
gives
Rob
this
Riggle.
Monologue and then it cuts to Rob Riggle, which is kind of like the ultimate like SNL parody trailer.
Yes.
Like,
I gotta go to war.
But you're just like, this man has never been in a serious movie in his life, or it feels like a Drunk History sketch.
Yes.
When you're like, there's That's exactly what it feels like. That this is like legitimate.
Yes.
And so unfortunately, now every time I see Rob Riggle, that trailer really like threw me for a loop. I just like was like, what am I looking at?
Jimmy Stewart, we have to send you to World War II.
You have to go to war. There's no way to know if he'll come back or not.
Oh, you're gonna make another movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It works.
What can you do?
Is there any key plot things that we should touch upon? Because I feel like obviously it all kicks off with the two guys dying and him shooting Derek Jeter, an iconic moment.
Yeah, well, we got to knock these guys on their asses. You know, Wahlberg wants essentially like he has his gun, right? But he wants his street cred back.
Yes.
Farrell has never wanted street cred in his life, but is bullied because of it. And like
gets street cred in other ways.
But also, obviously, I mean, we didn't talk about his checkered past as being a pimp in college for all of his friends.
A gator.
Oh my god. Him recounting it to Wahlberg and like with no recognition or acknowledgement that he was a pimp, and Wahlberg's responses. I think Wahlberg's so goddamn funny
Wahlberg
in this. Like
really
the
good
way
in
that
movie.
He responds to stuff like that of like, you were a pimp. That's a stable of horrors. Like, yeah. It's so funny. The straight faced kind of like reaction to it is just so good.
He's really good at modulating his voice in a way that it's like, whether intentional or not, but he's able to go high in a way that's so funny. Like when Wahlberg pitches up, it always plays.
Hey, what are you doing?
Yeah, like, hey,
it's,
say hi
it's
to your
the
mother
Boston
for
thing,
me.
Because
know?
Both Casey Affleck and Matt Damon also do it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. They all picked it up from each other.
I don't know. Did you see this? This was a reel going around, and I showed my partner because I was trying to explain Massachusetts accents because we had just been back home, and I was like, obviously the Boston accent's like very Southy and like you can get it, but it's like you have to be in a real specific part to get the actual thick Boston accent. Whereas the macro Massachusetts accent is a little bit of like what Wahlberg has, where it's the like, hey, your fucking brother's coming to town. You know, it's yeah. like you're like dropping an F, you're kind of a bit up, like, let's go to fucking Dunkin'. You know, it's like that.
But it goes outside of Boston. I think that people yes, think it just exactly. exists in Boston. No, and I'm it's like, my mom, it's the like, whole state.
It's Plymouth. Yeah. It's, you know, like a lot of people have it. My dad kind of pitch, like my dad has a little bit of a higher pitch voice. And so when he goes to a Red Sox game, he has the like, let's fucking go Sox. You know, like it goes up. So it's just always interesting to hear it with Wahlberg, you know.
Yeah, but. I don't know, he's a true Boston boy. Yeah. I was gonna say that in terms of like his comedy, I really love his little like anger lash outs in this movie yeah. where it like feels like the equivalent, like he tips drops a computer, but he drops it softly enough that you like can tell his heart's on it. Yeah. It's great, it's very funny, and he is very good at like these little like physical comedy yeah. things. Wahlberg should really, I think, like arguably stick to comedy. I don't
know.
I think he's better at comedy. Like,
unless
I
you
think
can really deploy him. Departed. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. I feel like Departed. I think he's good at the like the action bro lead. I just feel like it comes off so like working. Posturing that it yeah. just like doesn't ever like sell for me.
Correct. Yeah.
It's very hard to be a good action bro lead because you can't be too cool, actually, but you also yeah. have to take it somewhat seriously. And I think that that is a line that is remarkably hard to walk, but that also, like, the scripts never do you any favors. As someone that has, like, attempted many a time to write kind of those sort of, like, commercial actions, it is, like, it's really fucking hard to, like, figure out if it's a full comedy with action elements or if it's an action with comedy
right.
elements. Like, it's quite complicated. And I think that, like, when you're pulling from the stable of actors, you are generally pulling from either a comedic stable or someone who is an action lead that just wants to loosen things up a little right. bit. And
it's also, like,
it's
the craftsmanship of it. Like, I think you have to have, like, not to put toot directors' horns too much, but I do think you genuinely need for comedy like a very good director. Like, I think people think comedy
absolutely.
Is very just like you place the camera, and yes, like obviously you can have that, but I feel like where McKay works in this is like his craftsmanship of action sequences and of the movie as a whole
is just
so
a little more elevated.
Serious and elevated in that you yeah. then buy into it. So like when there's that big shootout and they're like sliding down, it actually looks not literally like a John Woo movie, but they're evoking
yeah. oh,
a
yeah,
John Woo sensibility. Yeah. So you're buying into the action. So then the comedy can also commit and play as hard. Whereas if it was sloppy, you wouldn't buy in.
Yes, I totally agree. My favorite sequence in this movie, like visually, is the scene when they go to the bar. And yeah. it's like the kind of like moving still image.
Yes. Yeah.
And like pans around with them
Black
doing crazier.
Hey, oh,
and crazier yes, stuff it is. Like yeah, it's so good. Like even just like the face Wahlberg pulls when they first walk in and his beer yeah. is spilling a little bit and he's like, yeah man, this is my spot. Like that in and of itself is like such good elevated comedy that is like unexpected, to the point where I was like, wow, how nice to see something that like I didn't expect to see in a comedy.
Yeah.
I completely
forgot. And it's a really smart like way too to like deliver the information of like this yeah. is the crazy night that they had, without it being just like a basic flashback to like some right. shit or whatever. Like it's a really fun little like short film like in the middle of the thing.
Yes. And I'm a yeah. Bee by the Black Eyed Peas is playing. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Feral biting the priest's arm is
yeah
just
exactly. Like that is so fucking funny, and that is very much like a director forward choice.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels like also like that. I think was. I forget the first movie that did that, but in like music videos that were doing that, but it was such a thing also of that late 2000s, 2010s visual style, because like
what
Snyder
is the term
also deploys
for it? It's like there's like a specific term.
I mean, how they shoot it, I love. It's like you just, it's like basically like Matrix style, but you're just like weaving through, taking tons and tons of photos.
Yeah. This is, you're going to laugh so hard. They did a behind the scenes rundown of BBC Sherlock in one episode where they did that. And so I will never forget how crazy it was to see like 50 cameras just lined up and be like, yeah, this is how we get it. All the cameras take the picture at the same time. Yeah. And then you can like move through them and it's like a little 3D. And I was like, this is so cool. But this, that's literally the only reason I know.
Years later.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, it's sick great. As hell.
It's really good. It's one of my favorite visual tricks. Anything else that we, this movie?
I know we talked about Keaton working both jobs. The reveal of him like giving the big speech and it's like presented like it's the big like here's all the cops together, like, you know, we got a big night coming, and then like the pan like back the cut to like the wide shot of him in his Bed Bath and Beyond like apron, that gets me every single time. I think that's so funny, and I love to like just the idea of like, yeah, this is just who this guy is. And so, like, he's working at Bed Bath & Beyond, but he's just taken who he is into this, like, other place. I just think he's so, I don't know. Keaton is just amazing.
He's so good at this. When they show up and he's like, oh, you guys want some cutting boards or whatever.
He's so excited. He's just, like, happy to see them. Like, he's a really nice guy.
I mean, the runner with, like, Keaton. Them calling him captain or not is also, like, good for an emotional payoff. Yeah.
It was my Letterboxd review, but he has to like show up to like staunch a bullet wound in his little Bed Bath and Beyond blue apron. It's amazing.
I like that both of your Letterboxd reviews I noticed this morning, both of them are just referencing Keaton. Like different things about Keaton.
It feels like he is due for, I mean, maybe this time has passed in television, but thinking about Keaton, and obviously like he's done a lot of TV, but not an ever led like a miniseries or a limited or something like that. And it feels like he is sort of an actor who could have at a time. You know what it feels like? If this was right after Spotlight, I'm shocked that there wasn't like a small HBO or even like an AMC.
He did Dopesick for...
Right. Oh my God.
He was the lead in that. I think he won an Emmy.
He did.
Literally forgot that Dopesick existed.
Dopesick is good.
Okay. Dopesick is good. That proves my point wrong. But you know, I guess like I
proves your point right that he was perfectly suited for something like that at that moment.
It just feels, you know what I mean? He has that sense to him. Like I would love to see him have not literally a Sopranos, but like something... You know,
I feel like it would be right for his career at this point, because it is kind of like the movie career to kind of what we were saying earlier. He's like not coasting, but like he's kind of, you know, taken the capital from the Spider-Man and the Birdman and whatever. And like he's just kind of in like a zone right now where it's like I feel like in general, the industry like never quite knew what to do with Michael Keaton. I think he doesn't fit into like a particular lane that's like, this is the stuff that we do with Keaton. Like he's not like the Oscar Beatty kind of like actor doing that, but he also isn't like marquee leading man of like a particular kind of genre. I think he can feed into a lot of that stuff, which is why I love him so much, but like I think he's been hard for like the industry to figure out how to market like after the 80s basically. And so you kind of see that with him doing like Good Rich, which is a movie that I think feels like it could have been made in the 90s. Like, you know, like I think it's a movie that I wish that we had more of like these days, like that kind of movie. But like there's not as much of like a industry like desire for movies like that anymore. And then other than that, I mean, like his recent run is doing Beetlejuice again and like the Flash and everything, like Brooke was saying earlier. And he's in this like Netflix movie coming out in August called The Whisper Man, but he I think has like a like it's like a very small appearance in it. He's like doesn't even get listed on like the press like release for it and whatever. He's like not even listed in the cast. So I feel like he's in an interesting spot of like where's he gonna go next? And I think that doing something like you were saying, Jordan, of like leading like a prestige like TV series, I think would make a lot of sense for yeah. somebody like him.
Well, because he was supposed to be in Batgirl, and that movie also then got scrapped.
I'm so mad. I'm never gonna get over it.
Just release the movie, guys.
Like right. I'm like actually never gonna get over it.
Yeah.
I can't wait for Coyote versus Acme to come out this year, and then like
I've been hearing it's really good.
I'm really excited, even if it's like medium.
Yeah.
To good.
Why not just put it out? No, it just drives me crazy. The idea of fully finished movies like not being released is like fucking
sin.
It's insane. Yeah. It's really, really crazy.
I'm Serena Williams, and I'm healthier on Row. I've lost 34 pounds in a year with GLP-1s, diet, and exercise. On Row, you can access GLP-1 options, including the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. Go to row.co/journey to see if you qualify. 14 to 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 2.2% to 3.1% in placebo arm. Rx only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/safety.
On Keaton, he is such a nervy guy, which I feel like that's why we don't know what to do with him. Like, he is so flinty as an actor in a way that I love. Like, he's like his tics and his mannerisms are so him. It's really hard to find other people who have something like that, where Keaton is kind of always, not to say he's always playing himself, but he's always bringing a Keaton mannerism to something. You know what I mean? Whereas, like, people can disappear into things, etc. So, like, it's not a Daniel Day-Lewis where you're like, oh my God, where is he? What is his thing? It's like, what is Keaton imbuing this role with? Which I think is fun.
I would be happy seeing him in another like Birdman-esque thing, right? If we so desire. I fucking love him in Spotlight so much.
He's amazing in Spotlight.
I would love to see him in like we were just saying, more adult dramas. It's fine. But like, oh my God, The Flash was so painful and like through no fault of his own, but I was like, free my man. Okay. Free my man. He does not deserve this. He deserves to be doing like adult dramas. So we'll see. I agree that he could have his Breaking Bad era. It's not too late. We need to start writing prestige miniseries for like guys in their 60s who were like, I cannot play a 40-year-old assassin anymore. Right. I'm done.
The only assassin I can play is one who has dementia.
Exactly. Right. Yes.
Well, there was another dementia show with Patrick Dempsey and Michael Imperioli that I walk by a poster from every single day. I don't know where it's coming out on, but it's called Memories of a Killer, I want to say.
Yeah. Did you walk by it on the WV lot? Not to dox you. Okay, yes. Great.
Doxed. I see. But one last thing on Keaton before we move on.
Yes.
Him in working at Bed Bath & Beyond, I think, is indicative of an era of Bed Bath & Beyond where...
Between this and Click.
And Click.
Bed Bath & Beyond stocks were...
Yeah.
Through the roof.
That's a good point.
Right? Like
the Beyond section.
Have I been to Bed Bath & Beyond in 20 years? Probably not. However...
I still have a Bed Bath & Beyond gift card from our wedding that someone gave us that I was like, the heck am I going to do?
Out on that. What are you doing?
I don't know. We just can't think of something that we need to buy. Maybe new sheets?
Yeah.
We already lived together. Sorry. We were living in sin.
Wow.
What am I supposed to buy at Bed Bath & Beyond? I don't know.
Go to the Beyond section.
I guess I could maybe treat it the way that Michael Keaton treats it, which is that you can treat it like a Crate and Barrel. Get yourself some kitchen goods.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, guys. I'm leaving this record feeling very empowered to go shopping at Bed Bath & Beyond.
Good. Should we
talk about
the awards in the box office? Yes.
The awards?
Yes.
The awards?
Brooke, it won the Teen Choice Award for Chemistry.
Did it really? Good for them. Hell yeah.
This is what I'm talking about.
I'm looking up this award stuff to see what the other nominees were.
Oh, I got
we
you.
We love the this Teen is, Choice Awards.
This
Not
is
as
a
much
fascinating
as the
year, I'll tell you.
You Guess know what? That Los Culturistas has effectively replaced the MTV Music Award.
It did.
MTV and... Teen Choice Awards.
This year is crazy though. If we scroll down, so Choice Movie Action, Fast Five, good win.
Good win.
movie actor was Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie for The Tourist.
Stop.
There's what no are we way doing, that guys? Anybody that watched
that was a teenager.
That's not a teen. What happened there?
I know.
That's like a Harvey Weinstein level meddling.
Yes.
Of like somebody was doing. Somebody was something pulling happened. Dirt something to get that. Right that makes no sense. Okay, sorry. Keep going.
Sci-fi fantasy. You have Lautner winning for Eclipse and Emma Watson for Deathly Hallows Part One. Deserved win for her.
Watson's good in that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Your drama
Lautner,
category.
What are we doing, guys? Come on. Let's be honest with ourselves.
Black Swan wins Choice Movie Drama with Pattinson winning for Water for Elephants and Portman winning for Black Swan. And then lastly,
similarly acclaimed performances.
Of course, everyone loves Water for Elephants. Rom-com goes to Easy A.
Yes,
pretty good win.
Excellent.
With Emma Stone winning, but then Ashton Kutcher wins actor for No Strings Attached, which is just
so rough.
Tough.
Guys.
And then comedy, this is where it's a little rough. So you have Bad Teacher win for comedy, and it was up against Bridesmaids, Due Date, Little Fockers, and The Other Guys.
Little Fockers.
Crazy.
I do like Bad Teacher. I think Bad Teacher is pretty good.
I mean, I love Cameron Diaz, but I'm shocked that Bridesmaids didn't win.
Yeah, I'm surprised Bridesmaids. The movies that it was up against. Good
Eva
category.
Mendes lost actress to Cameron Diaz. And then Justin Timberlake won for Bad Teacher, beating Will Ferrell.
Good Lord. What?
Eva Mendes being nominated for her actress.
We have been, 12 years since we saw Eva Mendes on our screens.
Eva, come
it's okay.
Back.
We only need 6 to 8 more years before the kids are grown up. And then maybe she'll have a nice second act. Yeah, to your point, you should do exactly what she wants. But I miss you, girl.
Those are some fascinating categories. I'm sorry. Alex Pettifer wins breakout actor in a double nom for I am number four in Beasley.
Classic. Oh, and Beasley double
and
nom.
Beasley, yeah.
Respect.
Never won anything.
And then the last nom that I think is fascinating is quote unquote hissy fit, which Wahlberg was nommed for in this movie, but lost to Ed Helms for The Hangover Part 2.
Wait, this is so good. I thought that was going to be a very sexist list of
that's
people.
What was my
no, it's four men, and the only woman nom is Kristen Wiig in Bridesmaids.
Which, fair. That is a
good,
deserved
a good
nom.
Fit. Yeah.
Oh my God, because that's exactly the best way to describe what Wahlberg is doing in this movie. He is throwing hissy fits.
Yes, it's actually a good win. Or nom, rather.
I'm a peacock. You got to let me fly.
God, we got to bring these back. If it is back,
we have Las Culturistas now. I really think that is like what has replaced it. And I think that we can start probably next year. There will be enough of a backlog that we can start being like, did this movie receive anything at the Las Culturistas Culture Awards?
Did the what do you win? Do you win a surfboard? Oh, yeah. Teen Choice is a surfboard.
A surfboard, of course.
Okay. Would you rather get a surfboard or get slimed? That's the real question.
I don't think
know?
That's much of a choice.
Give me the board.
Give me the board. Of course,
you
would want to get slimed. Jordan is one of those people that like you will go to an amusement park and be like, I want to be in the splash zone.
Absolutely.
When I'm like,
I don't like stuff
normal
on me.
Clothes.
Don't get anything on me.
I feel the same, Mitchell. Like,
I want the full experience. If I'm gonna commit, I'm gonna commit. You know,
I'm not committing.
It's just like
that's my biggest thing.
Of slime. That's the thing. Is that it's like. It seems like
you're really showering to get
it out of there.
I really can't believe that that's something that we like did for many years.
I'm looking up if they're still
to
going.
To respected celebrities.
Oh, it ended in 2019. Devastating.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, then,
COVID.
Is it MTV Movie Awards? MTV Movie Awards.
That ended
in 2024. We looked it up and we were slightly devastated to learn that it didn't exist anymore. Yeah.
That's so sad.
Yeah, very
sad. The popcorn. You would have won the little popcorn.
You won
thing.
The little popcorn. Yeah. Yeah. And a blimp.
Right.
Well, I guess the blimp.
Oh, yeah, the blimp. Yeah, you get slimed and then you get the blimp.
You get slimed and then you get the blimp. I just remember there's some photo of Leonardo DiCaprio holding a little Nickelodeon blimp and like no light behind his eyes.
God bless him for going.
Exactly. He showed up.
Okay, so the AARP Movies for Grownups Awards, I've actually never seen if you win an actual thing.
Oh, that's a good question.
What is the award itself? Let me find out. It is a Oh, it's like a gold brick kind of looking thing.
Okay, at least it's a thing. It's like that when you get a little thing. Yes. Can I talk about the box office for
this movie? Yes, please.
Okay, so this movie allegedly cost $100 million, which is That's fucking crazy.
You can see, though.
To me. I mean, it is an action movie. You know, at the end of the day. Like, they have, I mean, they probably were like, no, the point is that the car crashes are so ridiculous and that they're, like, causing a shit ton of property damage for, like, a misdemeanor. However, $100 million is crazy.
It still feels like too much.
It made $180 million worldwide. So it made its budget back. And like we said, I think it was a success. Like, it did.
I feel like it was a huge success on, like, digital and home video and stuff like that, too.
Dethroned Inception, as I mentioned. And the only other new movie that it was up against that was, like, a wide release was Step Up 3D. Like,
When did it come out?
August 6th, 2000. That makes so much sense.
This is a perfect August release.
100%. We're going into, like, this makes sense because I'm like, we're going into the school year saying these quotes. Like, I remember starting that year of whatever grade I was, and everyone was kind of riffing on this movie.
Interestingly, the next weekend, The Expendables came out. And dethroned this.
A movie about masculinity, like, as well.
Yeah, but I think that, like, what happened was that, like, other guys kind of got funneled into, like, the teen world, and then, like, Expendables was, like, for real men.
This is a movie, like, about men.
I mean, come on. 13-year-olds didn't know who Dolph Lundgren was.
Right. Yeah.
They barely know who Sylvester Stallone was. But, like, they all knew who Will Ferrell was. And I think, like, that's the... Yeah.
What was number, was number one in the box office that year than Harry Potter?
Or 2010? Let me look. You know I don't do great with these on the spot.
Well, I'm just fascinated.
Alice in Wonderland was probably pretty
That
made over a billion.
Oh, no. We have to do the Futterwacken.
Sometimes it gives me the stats about, like, how did it do?
Well, this would be easy if we had Box Office Mojo.
I miss Box Office Mojo so much. It's fine. This is so sad. Can I look? Okay, hang on. Don't worry. I got it. Let me cook. Give me a minute. Okay, number one, Jordan, this is so embarrassing for you.
I know, I just,
Number one was Toy Story 3.
Yeah,
number two was Avatar. Number three was Alice in Wonderland. Great call, Mitchell. I would have never predicted that. Harry Potter was number seven under Iron Man 2, Twilight Saga, Eclipse, Let's Fucking Go, and Inception, which is great.
Fascinating. Oh, I mean, Despicable Me premieres this year. Wow. Little do they know what's coming.
Little do they know. Minions and Monsters, who's ready, guys? Silent Hollywood?
I mean, look, same with How to Train Your Dragon also premiering in 2010. They 2010, had good no year for animation.
Coming. Yeah, yeah. They didn't know what's coming, to your point. Yeah. How long is it until we get a live action Despicable Me? It's only a matter of time.
Oh, that's frightening.
Yeah, I know.
That's actually, why would you put that into the world? Thing,
yeah.
A photorealistic Gru. It's like when they see The Simpsons, you know?
Yes, I think we're going to see how Minions and Monsters does, and then we'll go from there. Anyway, that's the other guys. Do we want to guess Letterboxd rating?
Oh. I'll say 3.3.
Mitchell, would you care to put in a guess? Not required.
I was going to guess 3.4.
Yeah. One of you is correct. Congratulations to Jordan. Yeah. It is a 3.3. Very nice.
It feels a little low.
Yeah, I had a feeling. I feel like these kind of movies
Wow. Does it, though? Almost 655K people have watched it, though.
It's pretty
popular. 49K reviews. I feel like that's larger than we usually see for movies like 15 years old or whatever.
No, for sure. I'll check our list, but I feel like it's probably in the middle, I would guess, for popularity.
Probably. Where do we think it's landing on the QQ?
You lead us off.
Scale, though. One and a half. What did I give Talladega Nights? Hang on. And by the way,
Talladega Nights is far more queer.
Oh my god, we gave Talladega Nights a 3.5 because, of course, I forgot.
They smooch.
I think I'm going to give this a 1.5. Okay. 1 point for Michael Keaton's bisexual DJ son, and half a point for sarcastic ballet. And I don't think that I can really give it too many points for deconstruction of masculinity, as much as I might like to. I am giving this rating with love in my heart. Jordan, how about you?
Yeah. I guess I probably have to say the same. Like
you
one
can
and a half, two.
With
no,
me.
Like
it's
one
okay.
and a half, two. I feel like that probably feels like where it's right.
I'm putting you down as a two.
Okay, I'll be more positive because you know it is analyzing masculinity in a way. Queer jokes without being necessarily problematic, which is always nice of a specific era. No, I mean, being realistic, this is a one and a half. But, you know, I'll be nice for today. And, yeah.
Okay.
Period.
I can get behind it. I can get behind it. Mitchell, how about you? How are you feeling?
Same general vibe as you guys. Yeah. I'll go with it. I'll lean towards a two for me to give a little extra shout for Dirty Mike and the boys.
That's
so,
you know what?
So
good
fair.
Point.
So fair.
1 star for both Dirty Mike and 1 star for the boys.
For the boys. Okay. I think that's very respectable.
Yeah.
I think it's very respectable.
I'm trying to find, I think it lands, yeah, it looks like it lands about like the midpoint for our
popularity. Oh, for
popularity
our popularity.
List.
This is not, sense. The QQ scale is not a record of how much we liked the movie. It is about how queer we think the
exactly.
movie
exactly.
is.
I give this movie 4.5 stars on Letterboxd.
There you go.
Give this movie 5 stars on Letterboxd.
And I am so glad that it serves as a comedy bomb for
Brooke
many,
Brooke has
many
logged
people.
It twice.
I have logged it. And no, I really don't get stars at all anymore because I am too scared. I need to create like a burner account.
Yeah.
It's so I even had to stop giving stars on Goodreads, and like now I'm like I need a Goodreads burner account. I need a Letterboxd burner account. Like I cannot have my full government name attached to me being like I.
It's hard when you're when you're more in the mix. It's tough.
It's so tough to be a public figure. Suffering from success.
I feel like I'm now willing, it's not willy-nilly, but if it's one that, it's if it's at least 4.5 and up, I'll throw a star. Or
oh,
if it's
sure.
something older than like 1990, then I'm like, okay,
where
I'll throw
the director,
a star.
You're not going to run into the director at a party and be right. like, oh, I'm so sorry that I really hated your movie. Yeah.
Like, Steven Spielberg, like checking Letterboxd, oh my God, you gave Always 2.5 stars.
Do you think Steven Spielberg knows who I am? Oh my God. Anyway, that's that. Point being, Mitchell, thank you so much for being here and lending us your wonderful brain and your wonderful self.
Thanks so much for having me.
You've really
awesome.
Covered the
you're
gambit now in
anytime.
Terms of tone. Like, where do you
very,
go next?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, very interesting. Well, we'll see. We'll see what comes up next time. But yeah, Johnny Guitar to the other guys, I think, is about as discordant as you can get.
You don't see a straight line. Occam's Razor is struggling.
Yeah, I really think about Johnny Guitar so much, though.
Great movie.
It has now become one of the movies that I like talk about and reference and like constantly. Yeah. It's also one of probably like 10 movies that I'm like, this is actually like a cool pull, as opposed to
agreed.
Somebody being like, no shit, that's a good movie. So I really it punches for me, it punches above its weight class because I get to talk about it more. Anyway, I
gotta
love
Johnny be one of the coolest posters we've ever covered too.
Oh,
it's
yeah
so
great poster.
It's wonderful. Anyway, thank you so much for being here. Anything you would like to plug?
Oh, no, I don't care. Like, check out Letterboxd, I guess.
Yeah. Good check out Mitchell's Letterboxd specifically. They're a great follow.
Good follow.
Thank you.
We are also on Letterboxd as well as all of the other social medias. I'm at Brooke B. Solomon.
I'm Jordan H. Goss.
And we're together a queer quadrant that goes for Letterboxd. And Twitter and Blue Sky and Instagram. And you can find this podcast wherever podcasts are streamed. Drop us a rate, 5 wooden guns only.
5 Toyota Priuses.
There we go. Only. Leave us a review. You can yell at me for not liking this movie. It's fine. I accept it. I understand what I have wrought upon the world by making my opinion public. And let us know what you might like to see us cover in the future.
And what could we be possibly covering in the future?
We're going to the girl version of a buddy cop movie, which is, of course, a bunch of fucking witches. And we're talking about The Craft. I'm very excited.
Great movie.
A very good movie. And we like horror year round. So
yes.
It doesn't need to be October for us to talk about some spooky
absolutely
shit.
Not.
I would argue that movie is actually, well, it is of course about spooky shit, but it's also about like girlhood and like
women.
Back to school.
Yeah. It
all
is about
good
back
stuff.
To school.
Yeah, it is. So tune in 2 weeks from today for that. Jordan, Anything you want to leave the wonderful folks of the New York City Police Department with?
Yeah, I mean, just always remember, aim for the bushes.
Aim for the bushes.
I'm Serena Williams, and I'm healthier on Ro. I've lost 34 pounds in a year with GLP-1s, diet, and exercise. On Ro, you can access GLP-1 options, including the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. Go to ro.co/journey to see if you qualify. 14 to 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 2.2% to 3.1% in placebo arm. Rx only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to ro.co/safety.